road, long hot summer. A couple kids running loose and wild. And he kissed her, she said, mister, take an inch and I'll give you a mile. I ain't here to do anything halfway, don't give a damn what anyone might say. I just want a free fall for a while. About midnight, he tells her, I ain't got no come on lines.
Well, I love you, or I'll try to. We got nothing to lose but time.
Stick your hand into my back pocket, light me up like a bottle rocket. I just want a free fall for a while.
This is the first annual All-Atlantis Paper Airplane Championship, a Stargate Atlantis fic written by Penny Plainitz, read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated NC-17, pairing John Rodney. It began with a bunch of scientists with cabin fever and one of Elizabeth's bright ideas. "Okay, who threw that?" Rodney snapped, picking up the messily folded paper airplane that had just grazed his left ear. "Honestly, are you all 12? I was under the impression I was dealing with adults here." "Is wet outside," Roddick said, who was looking suspiciously innocent. "We have to do something for amusement." It was wet. It had been raining for a solid week, and people were beginning to get restless. "This is a lab, not a paper airplane championship," Rodney said crossly. "And whoever made this should be ashamed of themselves. Talk about bad understanding of the principles of flight." He waved the airplane threateningly in the general direction of the lab. "Actually, that's not a bad idea," Elizabeth said from the doorway. She was meeting Roddick for lunch. For the third time that week, Rodney noted. "What? What's not a bad idea?" Rodney asked, confused. "A paper airplane championship. Like Roddick said, we need something to amuse ourselves. We could hold it in that big room down on the third level." "The ballroom?" Roddick asked. "It is not a ballroom," Rodney insisted. It has a disco ball, strobe lights. What would you call it? Radek retorted in what Rodney thought was an unnecessarily annoying tone of voice. Well, it could be anything. We don't know the disco ball is a disco ball, and...
And it's the perfect place, Elizabeth interrupted. We can award points for longest time in the air, furthest flight. It will be a good chance for the newer people to get to know everyone, and for a little bit of friendly competition.
Rodney snorted. Hardly competition. We'll wipe the floor with the rest of them. You, he snapped his fingers at Mulby, start investigating optimum paper composition. You, Simpson, he pointed. Designs on the wing fold. Roddick and I will work on centers of gravity, since he is so fond of throwing airplanes. He was already busy thinking of the best designs. Should he adapt the classic paper dart, or go for something more avant-garde with wider wings? Would they be allowed to cut the paper? Rodney! Elizabeth's voice broke in on his thoughts. He took one look at her face, and his heart sank. She was going to make him mingle. We'll have 2-person teams, one military, one civilian. It will give everyone a chance to work together in a stress-free situation.
But Elizabeth, he began desperately.
No buts, Rodney. In fact, we'll make a day of it. A little food, music, maybe some dancing. It'll be fun. I'll draw up an agenda, and we can form a working group, she said brightly. Rodney's heart sank even further.
Great.
Enforced jollity, just what he needed.
Oh, and Rodney? As head of science, I expect you to set a good example, so I'd better see your name at the top of the sign-up sheet.
Rodney put his head in his hands and groaned.
John clicked on the newest email in his inbox. The first annual Atlantis Fun Day, it read, including Gate Team Tug of War, music from Dr. Z and the ZPMs, an Athosian cookout, dancing till late, and the All-Atlantis Paper Airplane Championship. Sign-ups, one military and one civilian in each airplane-making team, to Sergeant Campbell by the end of the week. John read it through. He read it through again, thinking, we are so winning that tug-of-war. Then he read it a third time, his eyes lingering on the bit about the paper airplanes. He tapped his comm.
McKay, little busy here, Colonel, came the reply.
Busy designing paper airplanes without me? John asked, feeling a little worried. None of the regular military would be suicidal enough to approach McKay, would they?
What?
Rodney asked.
Do you read your email ever? John asked, amused.
Considering I'm at this moment elbow deep in malfunctioning control crystals, no, not today.
Stay put, McKay. I'm coming down there.
No way was he risking McKay getting snapped up by anyone else.
You don't even know where I am, Rodney said, sounding thoroughly confused.
So tell me, John said, already on his way to the transporter.
Rodney sighed. Level 4, Quad 2.
When John stepped out of the transporter, the heat hit him like walking into a wall. He found Rodney, true to his word, kneeling in front of an open panel, swapping crystals around, and cursing. He'd stripped off his uniform jacket and rolled up the sleeves of his t-shirt as high as they would go. The tight cloth made the muscles stand out. John took a moment to admire Rodney's biceps, his solid shoulders under sweat-sticky cotton.
Oh yeah, so winning the tug of war.
Hey, he said, so malfunctioning crystals?
Yep. These control the air conditioning, but for some reason they're putting out heat.
Rodney sat back on his heels and scrubbed a hand over his sweaty hair. John felt a prickle of sweat on his own forehead and knew it was only partly because of the heat. Sometimes he was almost sure Rodney knew he was flirting with him. Then Rodney would go and do something stupid, like Katie Brown, and they'd be back on square one. Still, John told himself, he'd get there eventually.
Shepherd?
Rodney nudged his leg, and John shook his head to clear it.
Can you hand me that crystal, the 12-sided one?
John looked around and found the crystal, which was a pale, translucent yellow, and put it in Rodney's outstretched hand.
Okay, I think I've got it,
Rodney said, sticking his head back inside the panel and slotting the crystal in place. He closed the panel and pressed a button on the outside that looked like a snowflake. Give that a few minutes, and we should be fine. He began to gather his tools. What did you want, anyway? What was so important that you came all the way down here? John tipped his face up to the air vents, enjoying the cool breeze. Paper airplanes, he said. What? Oh, God, no. She was serious? Rodney said, pressing a hand over his eyes. What? John asked, puzzled. Elizabeth's bright idea, the fun day. Yeah, that. Like I said, the paper airplane championship. They began to walk back down the corridor. Well, what of it? Well, we're a team, aren't we? John asked, suddenly unsure. Unless you'd rather... I mean, have you found someone else? Oh, stop pouting, Shepard, Rodney said irritably. I'm not pouting, John said, annoyed. Maybe he was a little, but did Rodney have to call him on it? Do you want to enter the competition with me or not? We'd better win, Rodney said as they reached the transporter. John felt relieved and wrist a friendly slap on the back. Hey, you and me, McKay, we're unbeatable. Suddenly, the whole city seemed to be going fun day mad. People could talk of little else, gathering in rec rooms and corridors. It was still raining too much to use the balconies and piers like they usually did, to discuss the best way to fold wings, where to get paper, and whether it was even worth competing in the tug of war if Ronan was going to be involved. Zelenka immediately laid claim to the ballroom for band practice every night, something Roddy found intensely annoying. Every night at 7, even if we're in the middle of something, it's all, I have to practice, Rodney. Dr. Esposito has written new songs, Rodney. Elizabeth will be disappointed, Rodney. Honestly, the way that man pines after her is embarrassing. Pass me that mallet, will you? John passed the mallet. The environmentals were still acting up on level 4, so Rodney was rerouting some of the conduits inside the big junction box. It involved a lot of bending over things to get at other things, so John was there for tool-handing purposes, and to stare at Rodney's ass. He was an experienced airman. He could multitask. Wait, Roddick and Elizabeth? Really? He asked, hopping back up on the window ledge. Rodney turned to stare at him. You really are kind of clueless, aren't you? Yes, really. He's been in love with her since Antarctica. Are they... John asked, fascinated. He let the clueless comment slide, because really, it was kind of true. I have no idea. I hope so. Someone in this hellhole should be getting some, and Roddick gets snappy when he gets frustrated. Rodney bent forward again to whack something inside the box. Well, that's nice, John said, half tempted to say that if Rodney had eyes, he could have been getting some for years. John had been wise to get to McKay as quickly as possible, he found. The first day after the announcement, Elizabeth confirmed that there would in fact be a prize for the best airplane, and put up 1 pound of her precious Sumatran beans, and a stack of post-its from her own personal stash. John could take or leave the coffee, but post-its were like gold dust, worth almost as much as non-homebrew alcohol on the black market. Unfortunately, the lure of coffee that didn't taste like it was made from acorns meant half the military wanted Rodney on their side. Look, Rodney said, glaring at a woman John vaguely recognized as Ensign Colfer. As I already told your 3 colleagues before you, I have a partner for the airplane championship. And honestly, do you really think I'd share the coffee with you? Didn't you tell me just last week that scientists who are in bad shape like me are a liability on a mission and should be shipped back to Earth? Colfer at least had the grace to look embarrassed. Go! Rodney flapped his hand at her, and take your pathetic caffeine addiction with you. John snorted as she left their table and made her way out of the mess hall. God, it's just like the time we started differential calculus all over again. Suddenly everyone's your best friend. Rodney dug into his apple cake, then looked at John. What are you smiling at? You calling anyone out on a caffeine addiction is a bit rich, John said. Yes, well, I deserve it more. So where does that leave me? John teased, unable to help himself. Glorying in your post-it notes? Come on, you can trade them to Carson for at least a quarter bottle of scotch, or the last 3 boxes of Malamars he's got. We have to win first, McKay. Well, of course we will. Unbeatable, remember? Rodney grinned so happily at him that John just wanted to ruffle his thinning hair, then kiss him soundly. Being a responsible adult with a firm grip on his libido, he didn't either. Yeah, unbeatable, he said, then pushed his muffin across the table just to see Rodney smile. You know, Rodney said as they walked down the steps from the gate, just sometimes I'd like to swap bizarre world for advanced technology world. He waved around the scanner, more out of hope than expectation. Honestly, with the amount of time we waste off-world, we could have built a puddle jumper from scratch. Come on, McKay, John bumped his shoulder. We're seeking out new life and new civilizations. Rodney rolled his eyes. He'd never have believed it the first time he saw John in that chair, but the man was a closet dork. He wished he didn't find that as appealing as he did. Rodney, Taylor said, dropping into step on his left. My people trade on this planet, and we need to maintain the relationships built up over generations. I would fail them as leader if this were not the case. And some of us happen to like fresh food, John added. Hey, Ronan called from up ahead. You guys gonna spend all day there? The market was busy with people, and loud with calls of traders and stallholders. Okay, guys, have a look round, check in every 15 minutes, John said. Taylor says this place is safe, but don't do anything stupid. That means no starting fights, trading weapons, or seducing alien princesses, Rodney reminded him. Would I do that? John asked. Yes, you would. You have, Rodney pointed out. I'll be good, John said, grinning. He slipped his aviators on. In contrast to the monsoon-like conditions back home, this planet was sunny and warm. Come on, John said. Let's go make friends. Looking for something in particular, sir? The stallholder asked. A gift for my sister. Can I see those? Rodney pointed to the roof of the stall, where lengths of silk in greens and gold hung. Of course, sir has made an excellent choice. The little old lady stood on a stool to reach them down. What you doing, Rodney? John's voice came from behind him, making him jump. Jesus, make some noise when you move, will you, Shepherd? Did I have to get you a collar and a bell? Rodney snapped. As soon as the words were out of his mouth, he got a mental image of John, naked, his long, graceful neck collared in black leather, and he had to bang his knee against the stall to stave off his arousal. He really needed to stop doing that to himself. Getting distracted lusting after your team leader was liable to turn you into wraith food if you weren't careful. Hey, I made noise. You were just distracted. John reached across Rodney, one elegant hand stroking the silks laid out in front of him. Nice, he said, but it's not really your style, McKay. Ha ha. Rodney jerked the scarf out from under John's hand. It's for Jeannie. It's her birthday soon, and I can get it sent back on the data list if I buy it now. I just can't decide which one to get. John braced a hand on Rodney's shoulder and leaned forward, and Rodney suppressed a shudder at the heat of him. That one, he said, pointing at one that had small glass beads sewn in a pattern of interlocking circles and a heavily tasseled fringe. Yeah, that's what I thought too, Rodney said. I'll take this one, please, he told the stallholder, and dug around in his tack vest for the small amount of Pegasus currency they all carried. One argent, the stallholder said, folding the scarf and wrapping it in tissue. She touched the cuff of his shirt. Little old ladies always seem to want to paw him, Rodney thought irritably, thinking of his Auntie Helen's dreadful friends. Will there be anything else? My cloth is much finer than this. She rubbed his shirt cuff between her thumb and forefinger, and I have colors much more flattering to the complexion. Yeah, Rodney, you do need some more civvies. John picked up a length of blue cloth and held it against Rodney's shoulder. He felt absurdly like a dress-up doll. Oh, your friend is right, sir. That is the color for you. Those eyes, so clear. She turned to John. You really must get him out of that black. It does nothing at all for the skin tone. As Rodney was wondering just when he'd wandered into Pegasus' version of what not to wear, John turned his making friendly with the natives smile on her and said, "Ma'am, I've been trying to get him out of those clothes for years." Rodney choked. He couldn't believe John had actually said that, or meant it the way he sounded. But John's elegant hands were smoothing the blue cloth over his chest, stroking out the creases, and when John's hand drifted over a nipple, Rodney had to bang his knee again. "Thank you," he said, gathering his wits, "but I'll just take this for now." He laid the silver coin down on the counter, shrugging the blue cloth off into an untidy pile. "Of course, sir. Thank you." The stallholder handed him the parcel, and Rodney stuck it in his backpack, feeling her eyes on him as they walked away. "So, you buy anything?" he asked John, as they walked further into the market, past stall selling grain and flour. "Yeah, this. Isn't it cool?" John shoved his wrist in front of Rodney's face to show him a leather bracelet made of plated thongs and matte silver beads. Rodney, feeling daring but thinking he could probably get away with it after that little display at the scarf stall, held John's wrist and stroked a finger over the leather. "And this conforms to uniform regulations how?" he asked. "There's plenty about me that doesn't conform to the regs, McKay," John said, his drawl drawn out and lazy. John, Rodney realized slowly, feeling a bit of an idiot, was flirting with him. He'd been flirting with him for months. This bore further study, but before Rodney could say anything, Ronan came up behind them, and Rodney dropped John's wrist hastily. "Hey, Ronan," John said, unperturbed. "You done?" "Yeah." Ronan gnawed on the chicken leg he was carrying. He always seemed to find the best food. "Okay," John said, scanning the market. "Let's go find Taylor and get out of here." "You have no need," Taylor said, coming towards them. "I am here." "You get your trading done?" John asked. "Yes. It was good to see the Master Tanner again. He was an old friend of my mother. He also gave me these." She gestured with the paper bag she held. Ronan sniffed the air. Rodney could smell it himself, warm sugar like fresh-baked donuts. "Hesta's purses?" Ronan asked, a grin breaking across his face. "Yes, I had not had them since I was quite small, but Master Deb remembered how fond of them I was." She offered the bag to Ronan. "What are they?" Rodney asked. They smelled fantastic, whatever they were, and he found his mouth watering. "They are very similar to the pastries we have in the mess," Taylor said. "When I was small, my mother began to take me through the ancestral ring to learn the ways of the trader. I was quite fearful of the ring at first, and she would bribe me with the promise of these. It is rare to find them now, except at large markets such as this. Would you like to try one? There is nothing in them that would harm you." She offered the bag. Rodney drew out one of the pastries. It was sticky with syrup or honey, and looked like an oversized wonton. He bit into it, tasting nuts and sugar and spices. It was a lot like baklava. It was also delicious, and he quickly polished it off, licking his fingers. "Thanks, are there any more?" he asked, pulling his thumb out of his mouth with a pop. Shepherd looked a little dazed, and shook his head as if to clear it. "Leave some for the rest of us, Rodney." It would have sounded sterner if he hadn't been... Was he? Yes, Rodney realized. John Shepherd, of the liquid hips and oddly attractive ears, was looking right at his mouth. "There is one for each of us," Taylor said, interrupting his train of thought. "But now that I know you like them as much as I, we will seek them out again." "Thanks, Taylor," Rodney said, pleased. "You are most welcome." Taylor smiled at him, like she was pleased she could share something good from her childhood for a change. They strolled back to the gate at a leisurely pace, Rodney's thoughts buzzing with the implications of that look.
"Psst! Psst! Rodney!"
Rodney turned around from his laptop. It was mid-morning and the lab was busy, so he couldn't immediately see who had called him.
"Rodney!"
John was leaning in the doorway. He caught Rodney's eyes and beckoned. Rodney sighed, but pushed himself to his feet and went. "Can't you radio like a normal person? What do you want?" "The blue room on the third level. 1900 hours. Alone." John spoke in a low whisper. It was really most unfair, Rodney thought, that John's drawl made everything sound like an indecent proposal. It gave a guy ideas. What? He asked, confused. Airplane designs. Only 3 weeks to go, and I figured we'd get started on some preliminary models. Rodney felt simultaneously relieved and a touch disappointed. Oh, yes, of course. We'd better come up with something good. I've already got Zelenka gloating about his revolutionary new nose design. John pushed himself upright and wandered over to the desk, picking up Rodney's red Sharpie and twirling it through his fingers. Rodney watched, finding himself almost hypnotized. It'll be fine. Oh, and I signed us up for the tug-of-war, too. What? No way! I thought you were joking! Come on, Rodney. John tipped his head to the side. Ronan's all excited. No. Do it for Taylor, then. That asshole Walker, you know, the one on Gruel's team, he bet a month's worth of movie and TV privileges that his team would beat ours because my team doesn't have a deadweight scientist and a girl. Rodney gaped. Does he have a death wish? Nah, he just hasn't been here long enough to get knocked on his ass by her yet. John smirked, still twirling the pen. Well, the prospect of seeing Walker, who routinely swiped the last cupcake and had loftily told Zelenka hockey was a waste of time, getting his ass handed to him, was tempting. Plus, you should be good at it, John said offhandedly. Really? You think so? Rodney was oddly pleased. Sure, it's mostly pig-headed stubbornness, and you're good at that. Well, thank you, Colonel. And here I was thinking you were giving me a compliment. John stepped toward him and clipped the Sharpie onto the neck of Rodney's shirt. He felt John's fingers brush his skin. Nah, but I know our paper airplane will kick ass. Later, McKay. Rodney stared blankly after him for a minute. As well as what he was 80% sure was flirting, Shepard had been doing an awful lot of touching lately. It had begun just after the thing from another dimension had gone back home. Nothing blatant or overt, at least not until just now. Nothing that couldn't be seen as just simple contact. A slap on the back, a nudge of the elbow as they sat next to each other, brushing fingers when he passed him something. At first, Rodney thought he was doing it by accident. But now, he was almost sure it was deliberate. And more, he was losing the fight against the urge to touch back. Rodney was still pondering what it all meant as he hurried toward the blue room, actually an unused lab with blue stained glass windows. Later that night, had Shepard been, well, anyone other than Shepard, Rodney would have, well, he would have said something. It wasn't even the fact that John was male or military. Rodney had fond memories of a week in Antarctica spent with Gray-Eyed Corporal from Boston, intent on finding out all the ways two grown men could keep warm in a sub-zero climate. No, it was that John was, without sounding too high school about it, his closest friend. And if he was reading him wrong, he risked losing that. He could wait, he thought. Wait until John worked up to doing whatever it was he was planning, until he had proof positive that his feelings, God, feelings, were returned. Besides, he was kind of enjoying the anticipation. Shepard was already in the lab, sheets of paper spread out over the bench. Hey, Rodney, he said, looking up. Colonel, what's all this? Rodney gestured at the bench. There were magazine pages, printer paper, comic book pages, a pad of ruled paper, the thick parchment stuff the Ethosians wrote important documents on, and several squares of thin paper covered in polka dots. Origami paper? Rodney asked, picking up a square. Yeah, Arma does paper folding. Said he was always fidgeting as a kid, and his grand taught it to him to keep him occupied. John reached for a sheet of ruled paper and made the center crease, running his thumbnail down it, making it sharp, then unfolded it and folded the corners to the center. Rodney pulled himself out of his reverie as he realized what John was folding. Wait, what are you doing? We won't get anywhere with that model. Relax, John drawled. He pushed a stool toward Rodney with his foot. Sit down. I thought we'd start with a standard model, get some baseline readings, and then we'd know what to change. That's actually a good idea. Rodney tore a sheet of paper off the pad and began his own airplane, the folds coming back quickly to him.
Well, don't sound so surprised, McKay.
John stood. You done?
Yeah.
Rodney held up his airplane. You know, I was thinking, we need to look at how it's launched as well. Then maybe examine all the different papers, work out a formula for each one in terms of how far each goes. That origami paper is light, it'll spend a lot of time in the air, but we get points for distance as well as duration. So we may need to see about using heavier paper or weighing the nose and then... He broke off.
John was looking at him, mouth twitching as though he was trying to suppress a smile.
What? He asked.
Nothing, it's just... John shrugged.
You get intense about the weirdest things.
That's bad? Rodney said, confused.
No, said John vehemently. No, it's great. It's just kind of funny seeing you all thinky about paper airplanes.
Rodney stood. You want to win, don't you?
Sure.
Then stop worrying about how intense I am and let's fly these airplanes.
Okay. But just so you know, mine is totally going to beat yours.
Excuse me? Genius here.
Perpetually bored at school kid here. I flew a lot of paper airplanes.
I bet you did. Roddy moved clear of the bench.
Yeah, I told Janie Spence in third grade I liked her via paper airplane.
Rodney grinned at the image of a young John wooing with paper airplanes. No doubt they fell at his feet even then.
Did it work? He asked, launching his airplane.
Nah, John launched his. It fell short of Rodney's. She was already sweet on Brad Ross, and she told me my ears were pointy.
Rodney laughed.
Well, they are, kinda.
I'm crushed, McKay. John felt the tips of his ears and pouted. You also lost. Mine flew 15 centimeters farther.
Rodney pointed out, still chuckling.
John bent to retrieve both airplanes, then handed Rodney his airplane back.
Best 2 out of 3?
He asked, beaming at Rodney with uncomplicated happiness. Rodney walked back to the edge of the bench.
You're on, he said.
Explain to me again why I'm being dragged all the way out here, Rodney huffed as he tried to keep up with Ronan's long strides.
Because I think I recognized something on my run this morning, and I don't have the ancestor's gene to open it,
Ronan said over his shoulder. He led Rodney down one of the corridors in level 2. They didn't use anything down here because it tended to flood when it rained. Rodney splashed unhappily through shallow puddles. The rain still hadn't let up. Luckily, the section the Knot ballroom was in was watertight, or next week they'd all be flying their airplanes in waders.
Wait, I thought you went running with Shepard. He asked.
I do, but I get bored. Here, this is what I found.
Ronan had brought them to a solid door set with several panels of locks. Rodney looked at it and pointed the scanner at it.
It's reading, well, just Atlantis's energy signature and some low-level EM stuff. Half the labs have these readings.
But they don't have this, Ronan said. He pointed to the symbol cut into the door.
On Zetida, our oldest armories had this symbol. The arms master said it came from the ancestors' weapons houses, and they took the symbol from ruins they found.
Rodney looked closely. From his limited ancient, he could read the symbols for fire, overlaid with the symbols for gone.
Well, the level of locks means there's something in here, at least. What do you think it is?
I think it's an armory or a weapons factory, Ronan said.
Well, let's have a look, shall we?
Rodney said.
The door resisted him for a while, but he thought, please, please, at it, and followed it with images of them attacking Wraith, and the door reluctantly swung open.
Wow, Rodney said as he looked around. The room was huge, with other doors suggesting more rooms to follow. Stacked up against the nearest wall were hundreds of drones. Rack upon rack of what looked like ancient surface-to-air missiles ran the center of the room. Padded cases held the large crystals that controlled the jumper's weapon systems. Those alone would have been worth getting excited about, but the half-finished drones on one bench pointed to the fact that there was an actual manufacturing base somewhere on this level, too.
Rodney tapped his headset. Shepard, get down here. Level 2, the half-flooded section in Quad 8. No, I'll explain when you get here. Oh, and bring Roddick if he's around. And Nico. Ronan, he said, turning to him. This is...
pretty cool, Ronan said.
Look, I think these are the same as my gun. The design is a lot like the heirloom pistols my first taskmaster had. He took the gun from Ronan, turning it over in his hands. If this is a weapons factory, there should be a test range somewhere. You could try it out. He opened a door at random, then grabbed the door frame to steady himself.
McKay?
Ronan asked. What is it?
The factory. We saw schematics in the database, but we thought it was off-world. This is where they manufactured their weapons.
He ran forward and ran his hands over the terminals, lighting them up. Immediately, ancient text flashed up on the viewscreens, and a wall he thought was opaque glass became transparent, showing the manufacturing equipment on the level below. On a bench set against the wall were things that looked like half-finished grenades, mines, and a couple of odd, squat pistols. Ronan picked one up.
"Wait, don't..." Rodney began. "There were more out there. If they were dangerous, why keep making them?"
Ronan reasoned. He pushed open a side door, and, sure enough, there was a test range on the other side. Instead of paper targets, there were tall figures, a little like crash test dummies, mounted on tracks.
"Well?"
Rodney said, impatient. Ronan sighted and fired. There was a loud sizzling sound, and the target vanished. It didn't explode or turn to dust. It was simply there 1 second, and gone the next.
"Cool," Ronan said, deadpan.
"Cool? We have disintegrator guns! That is beyond cool!" Rodney's mind whirled with the possibilities. Could they retrofit the jumpers with them? Being able to make the Wraith vanish into thin air would be much easier than taking them out face to face. What else could they adapt them for? Shepard is going to go crazy. He'll be like a kid in a candy store, and he'll get that smile, you know the one. It makes him look... He trailed off, realizing in his excitement that he'd come perilously close to confessing his crush. I mean, he backpedaled. You know what he's like with things that are noisy and dangerous.
It's probably why he likes you,
Ronan said, shoving the gun into the back of his leather pants.
What's that supposed to mean?
Rodney asked, confused.
Means you make as much noise as an agrop at sunup.
What's an agrop?
Like a chicken. We had them on Zatita. They're tasty, but you need to watch for the spurs. They're poisonous.
Poisonous chicken, Rodney said flatly. Then the rest of Ronan's statement caught up with him.
Wait, what do you mean, likes me?
Ronan shook his head ruefully.
He likes you.
Well, obviously. I mean, he likes all of us. We're his team. He likes Tayla, Elizabeth, you.
He trailed off at Ronan's look of almost fond exasperation. He doesn't stare at my ass, though, Ronan said finally.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, well... Rodney waved a hand, attempting to encompass the whole 6'4" of muscles and attitude package of hotness. And then realized he just told the scariest man on 10 planets he thought his ass was worth staring at. I mean, not that I would...
Oh, God.
He put his hands over his eyes.
Ronan gave him a feral grin. McKay, I was in the army. We had plenty of men who loved other men. I'm not going to hurt you.
Well, that's good, Rodney said, relieved.
And he really...
Well, at least he was getting some objective confirmation of his suspicions, though the fact it came from Ronan was a bit disturbing.
I thought you were a genius, McKay.
They walked back into the main room, and Rodney started translating the ancient on the viewscreens the best he could.
I am, just not about this stuff.
Ronan thumped him companionably on the back.
Never mind.
So, you really think Shepard... Rodney began, but broke off as Shepard, a team of Marines, and Lorne burst through the door.
McKay, what's the...
Shepard broke off, taking in the room.
Wow, cool,
he beamed. He had that look all right, the rare, excited smile Rodney associated with puddle jumpers and personal shields, and letting his guard down enough to actually have fun. Roddick and Miko, slightly out of breath, came through the door. "Rodney, is this what I think it is?"
Roddick asked avidly, looking around him.
"Yeah, it's the weapons factory. Thanks to Ronan, we've got drones, guns, explosives, you name it. And we've got the capacity to make more."
"Really?" Lorne asked.
Rodney pointed. "Through that door is the factory itself. Now, I need everyone to catalog the rooms, see what else we can find. Migo, those drones there are incomplete. See if they match what you've been trying to build. Roddick, those large crystals are for the jumper weapons. Have a look at them. And we need everyone down here from the labs that could be spared. I'd like to move as much as possible upstairs. It may be that once we've opened the room, water will start seeping in."
Rodney looked around at everybody.
"Well, get on with it,"
he made shooing motions. "Major Lorne, why don't you check out the far end of the room?" John suggested, as Roddick and Miko got to work. "Take Ronan with you. See if he recognizes anything else." He turned to the Marines. "Looks like we don't need you guys after all. Go see if the science teams need anything bringing down here." Rodney beckoned to John. "Colonel, let me show you something." He led John back into the factory control room. John immediately crossed to the window and looked down into the factory. "Again? Cool," he said. "Beyond cool. I'll need to check, but if it's in good working order and we can get the materials, we need never worry again about weapons or ordnance. But that's not all." He picked up the second disintegrator and motioned John to the firing range. "Try this out," he said, almost unable to conceal his excitement. Shepard was going to love this. John fired. Again, there was a sizzling sound like frying bacon, and another target vanished. "It disintegrates! We have disintegrator guns!" John looked inches away from jumping up and down like an excited child. "Yes! Lots of them! And once I get a good look at them, I think we can integrate the technology into the puddle jumpers!" Roddy felt a grin stretch across his face in response to John's. "Really? We could pick the darts right out of the sky! I think we might even be able to jury-rig something similar into the Daedalus. I'll need to speak to Hermiod and Novak, but if that's the case..." "Rodney," John breathed softly, "we could take out Hive ships. No debris to give us away, no time for the darts to escape." He put the gun down and stepped forward. "Let me look at the chair, and we might even be able to make a surface-to-air beam." Rodney eyed John, who looked a little glassy-eyed with excitement. "McKay, I could kiss you," John said, suddenly right up in his personal space. Rodney looked at him, parted lips, blown pupils, almost vibrating with excitement. "What the hell," he thought. They could blame it on the new weapons. Roddick was probably being all European and kissing people left, right, and center. "Okay," he said, heart thudding. John looked at him. "What?" "I said, okay. You can, kiss me." The seconds stretched out in silence. Rodney felt more and more sure he'd made a terrible mistake. Damn Ronan, and damn his own stupid daydreams that John would... John said at last. He looked a little wild, but hopeful. Rodney nodded encouragingly. He didn't want to spook him. John looked around quickly, as if checking they were still alone. Rodney heard the secondary locks click on the firing range door. Then John stepped forward and pressed his lips quickly and softly to his. It was sweet and fleeting and utterly frustrating. "There," John said. "Hey, I just found you a way to defeat the Wraith. I've had more passionate kisses from great aunts. It wasn't just the armory, was it?" He trailed off, uncertain again. John shook his head. "No, I want..." He swallowed. "More." "Oh, God, me too," Rodney breathed, relieved. He leaned in to kiss John, intending to show him how it was done, when John stopped him with a hand on his chest. "Now?" he asked. Rodney thought about it. He'd been momentarily distracted, but really, he did want to check out the rest of the armory, and fucking in a firing range was not his idea of a memorable first time together. Later? He asked, hoping John wouldn't change his mind. "After I've got everyone started on this." John smiled. "My quarters, tonight. That way there'll be no interruptions." Rodney nodded rapidly. "Yes, tonight," he said, relieved.
Oh, well, good then.
John smiled at him.
Yeah, good. Rodney grinned back. He realized they were basically staring like idiots at each other, so he thought open the door and went through into the control room.
Later, he said, and turned to look at the consoles, lips tingling from the briefest of kisses. John filled his day as best he could. It was still raining solidly. The meteorologist said this was completely normal for a temperate maritime climate, but all the rain was beginning to grate on his nerves. Since he couldn't run outside, he got beaten up by Ronan and Taylor. Ronan kept smirking at him, and John was almost sure he knew. Limping slightly, he retreated to his office to do all his paperwork. As he signed off the requisition forms for the gate room, he was slightly perturbed to see Sergeant Campbell's form was covered with small doodles of paper airplanes, and the one from Cabo Vasquez looked like it had actually been an airplane. He spent 15 minutes studying them before he decided that he and Rodney had nothing to fear in the way of competition. Finally, he retreated, bored and a little grouchy, to his quarters, changed into civvies, and sprawled out on the bed with one of his new comic books. He told himself he wouldn't be too disappointed if Rodney didn't show, that he was busy, and they could pick up where they left off later. He wasn't convinced. Just as he was about to call it a night, the door chimed, and he leapt off the bed, feeling excited and foolish at all the same time. "Yeah?" he called out. "It's me," Rodney called through the door. John thought the door open and locked it behind him, then stood in the middle of the room, feeling a little awkward. "So," Rodney said, fidgeting with the hem of his t-shirt. He'd changed, John realized, just a clean pair of black BDUs and a soft-looking gray t-shirt, but John liked it. "Yeah," he said. "So," Rodney said, "busy day?"
So-so, John said.
"Good," Rodney said, plucking again at the hem of his shirt, twisting it. John wanted to go over there and still his hands, but he couldn't bring himself to move.
"Yeah, good," John said aimlessly.
"We're really bad at this, aren't we?" Rodney said, smiling crookedly.
"Yeah, we kinda are."
Now that he was so close to getting what he wanted, he had no idea what to do next. Well, he had ideas, but he wasn't sure where to start. Rodney took 3 steps toward him and slowly, gently, slid his big warm hand up John's arm and around the nape of his neck and just let it rest there. John brought his hands up to bracket Rodney's hips. He tilted his head down just as Rodney tilted his up, and their lips met softly, just like before. It was short and sweet and utterly compelling. Rodney's thin, slanted mouth under his, fingers dancing at his hairline, scratching on his scalp. Rodney sucked briefly on his bottom lip, flicked his tongue over it, then drew gently away. He left his hand where it was, stroking gently up and down. "Oh," John breathed, at a loss for words. He let his head rest on Rodney's shoulder, nosing at the color of Rodney's shirt. Rodney chuckled, and John felt it with his whole body.
"Coherent, John," Rodney teased. "If that's all it..."
Before he could finish his sentence, John kissed him again, deeper this time, slower, but just as sweetly. Rodney's mouth opened easily to his, and John swept his tongue inside, tracing his teeth. Rodney hummed appreciatively when John slid his hands round to palm his ass, and broke off to nuzzle at John's neck and jaw, kissing his erotic scar. A wave of intense pleasure rolled through him unexpectedly, and John shuddered, feeling his cock twitch and harden. "John, you okay? Should I stop?" Rodney let John go and stepped back.
"No," John said, reaching out for him. "I want this. I'm just really sensitive there."
Rodney grinned.
"Good sensitive or bad sensitive?"
"Good sensitive, very good. I didn't know it felt like that."
Rodney puzzled.
"You mean no one's ever kissed your neck before?"
They had. Everyone he'd ever been with had seemed magnetically drawn to his neck. John had never cared much for it, until now it seemed.
"Yeah, I mean, not since Elia bit me."
He sat down heavily in the armchair, wondering how they'd gotten from Rodney sucking on his tongue to this.
"Ooh,"
Rodney said speculatively. Do you think it has something to do with the dormant Urata's DNA? Does the bite on your arm do the same thing? Have you...
Do you really want to talk about this now? John asked, sprawling back in the chair and splaying his legs, gratified when Rodney's gaze flicked from his face to his crotch and back.
Excellent point, Rodney said.
Then come back here, he said.
John held out a hand and Rodney took it, straddling his lap, heavy thighs pressing down on him. Rodney's hands framed his face.
I think we were about here, he said, and John was being kissed again.
When he'd thought about kissing Rodney, and he'd thought about it a lot, he'd finally decided that Rodney would be fast and messy, a little slapdash, eager to get to the main event. He'd forgotten the thoroughness and patience Rodney showed when he thought something was really worth doing. Rodney kissed him with every bit of care he put into fixing broken puddle jumpers, slowly, sweetly, holding his head just so. Rodney's tongue was slick and sly, and John let him in willingly, twisting his tongue with Rodney's, reveling in the feel and taste of him, working his hands up the back of Rodney's t-shirt and getting a little drunk on the closeness of him. He pushed his hands all the way up Rodney's back, rocking up the shirt. "Can I take this off?" he asked. In answer, Rodney got to his feet, stripped his shirt off over his head, kicked off his shoes, and shoved his pants and boxers down. He was pale and solid all over, and half-hard already. He looked pretty damn good.
"Eager, McKay?" John smirked.
"Saves time later. Your turn." John leaned back, letting his gaze travel over Rodney's biceps, his hard little nipples, flushed cock, and sweetly vulnerable bare feet.
"Maybe I like looking at you," he said, unbuttoning his shirt slowly and letting it hang open, moving on to his belt.
"Really?" Rodney asked, sounding pleased and surprised. "I mean, I thought you were, and Ronan said you stared at my ass, but I wasn't."
"I did. I do." John stood, towed off his sneakers and pushed on his jeans and boxers.
"I even stand behind you when we practice for the tug of war so I can stare at your shoulders," he added, too horny to be anything but honest. He stepped out of his jeans, shrugged off his shirt, and stood there, naked.
"Jesus Christ on a cross," Rodney swore fervently, closing his eyes. Then,
"Wait, you made me do all that practice for your own perverted ends?"
"I made you practice so we can win. Getting to see you all grunting and sweaty was an added bonus."
He took another step toward Rodney, and they were kissing again. Rodney steered him toward the bed with a hand on his ass, pushed him up against the headboard and settled between his thighs. Rodney's skin was smooth and warm, and John wanted to touch every square inch of it.
"You know, there are more enjoyable ways of getting me all sweaty, if that was your goal," Rodney said after a while.
His pupils were blown wide, and his hair was sticking up at crazy angles from John's hands.
"Would this be one of them?" John asked, lazily stroking his hands down Rodney's back and onto his ass. It felt even better naked, taut and round, and John gave a little squeeze.
Exactly, Rodney said, shimmying happily. He bent to lip at John's scar again, pressing his lips softly to it, covering it with licks and tiny kisses. John shuddered again, tilted his head back, giving Rodney free rein. His cock was iron hard, and he could feel Rodney's cock pressing into his hip.
"God, keep doing that,"
he panted. It felt like sparks under the skin, like the scar and his cock were directly connected.
"You're that sensitive there?" Rodney asked, trailing a hand down John's chest to his cock and curling his fingers round it loosely, enough to tease, but not enough to get him off.
"Yes," John gasped, as Rodney started stroking him frustratingly slowly, while still kissing his neck. His world narrowed down to Rodney's lips and hand, and he was jerking his hips up, seeking more, when Rodney stole his hand and said, "Let me try something."
"What? No, that's working just fine," John protested.
"Look, if you don't like it, I'll give you a nice blowjob, but just let me," Rodney said. He tapped John's arm, and John unpeeled his hands from Rodney's body.
"Let me just," Rodney said again,
and lightly ran his fingertips over the bite scar on John's arm, while at the same time stroking his cock. The effect was electric. John was so sensitized that even the barest scratch of nails felt like fire. He'd never felt anything like it, fully appreciating having an ambidextrous lover in ways he hadn't even imagined.
He bucked up in Ronnie's grasp and groaned. Oh, oh God, do that again.
Knew you'd like it, Rodney said, insufferably smug. Or maybe you'd prefer this?
And he lifted John's arm to his mouth, licked a stripe across the scar, and blew across it. John gasped, drawing air into his lungs in big gulps, torn between Rodney's hand still steady on his cock and the completely unfamiliar sensations on his skin, pleasure-like prickles of flame all along his arm.
Do that again and I'll come, he warned.
Hmm, Rodney said. I think I can do better than that. He set his lips to John's throat, sucking hard, stroking John's cock and teasing his arm with gossamer-like touches. Rodney tightened his grip, twisting his wrist, and bit down with the barest edge of teeth, and that was enough. John came, hips jerking up, gasping, moaning, covering Rodney's hand and chest with cum. John floated, completely blissed out, tiny aftershocks rippling through him, until he heard Rodney saying, John! John! Hoarsely, and saw him jerking his own cock urgently.
Let me, John said, gathering up the last of his reserves of energy and coordination to sit up and kiss Rodney hard. He joined his hand with Rodney's, feeling his own cum coating Rodney's cock, thick and hard and perfect in his grasp. It took one, two, three strokes, and Rodney was coming too, groaning into John's mouth, then collapsing on top of him, spent.
John petted his hair, his back, a little haphazardly, then felt Rodney's lips moving against his skin.
We'll stick together, he said slowly.
Can't be bothered to move,
John said, feeling lazy and satisfied, snuggling Rodney more firmly against him. Rodney wriggled free.
John, just promise I'll come back. Just let me clean up.
Do I have to move?
John asked. Now that the fairly spectacular orgasm was beginning to wear off, his body was protesting that it had been roughly treated a few hours before. The boneless feeling that always came after good sex was joined by a deep ache and tiredness. Rodney huffed and leaned over John to pick up his discarded t-shirt. He wiped himself off, then ran the shirt over John, cleaning him off roughly.
Are you always this lazy after? Rodney asked as he lay back down. Hey,
John protested half-heartedly. He opened his arms. He still wasn't ready to stop touching. Rodney was so easy to touch, warm and responsive, and he'd missed honest-to-God skin contact almost as much as the sex.
Stay?
He asked quietly. Rodney snorted, but cuddled back against him. John put both arms around him and laced his fingers together on Rodney's belly, nosing into his sweaty hair.
Idiot,
Rodney said softly. Of course I will. He stroked one finger over the inside of John's arm, and John shivered again.
Oh, this is going to be fun, Rodney said, voice full of promise.
John drifted off to sleep to the tickle of Rodney's hair on his nose and the feel of him, warm and comfortable, against him.